in a secret lab somewhere in the Western Hemisphere. The perfect human specimen has been born. He has the strength of 10 men and the wisdom of 20.
Rick Munn.
Now you listen here. There's a very naughty boy.
TNT Radio.
Now go away!
Ah, Monday the 13th of May, 2024. TNT Today's News Talk. This is Locked and Loaded. I'm Rick Munn. Hopefully, fingers and toes crossed, you enjoyed the first hour. If you didn't, maybe things will get better for you here in the second hour. We aim to please. We try and hit the mark as often as we can. Sometimes I miss it. I'm not going to say we miss it. I miss it. Or then again, do I? Is there any such thing as missing the mark when it comes to TNT? I don't think so. So another action-packed hour on the way. Gemma is going to be joining me again in just a minute, looking at some of the breaking headlines in the UK and Ireland. Mark Byford will be joining me right about 20 past the hour. He's a farmer based in Suffolk. Grim times, I will say this. Grim times looking like ahead for farmers in the UK at the minute. Lack of support, weather conditions horrendous, crops failing, so on and so forth. And he's going to be giving us his views and opinions on that when he comes on. And then John Waters will be rounding off the hour. There's another festival, lest I forget, coming up at the end of this month, another festival in the Lake District. If you go onto our website, tntradio.live, you'll be able to get the details. I'm not going to go into all the details, but I believe it's the 24th to 27th of May, the Stand in the Light Music Festival. That's in conjunction with Stand in the Park and the Light Newspaper. So there's a big three-day music festival going on in the Lake District at the end of this month. If you're in that area or you're interested or you're a music fan, get yourself up there. Show them some love and support. And again, details are on our website, tntradio.live. Debt. Let's talk about debt here for a little bit. Nasty old thing is debt. The average credit card debt in the US is now soaring past $6,500. $6,500 per American. Average, obviously, some people are a lot higher than that. Some people are a little bit lower than that. I'm looking at some of the responses to this article that was published in Zero Hedge. One says, $6,500, bro. Pretty much everyone I know has at least 20 grand rolling over every month. Someone else writes, people are broke, in inverted commas. Another person says, people trying to survive by every means. I guess everyone is hoping for a raise, and on it goes. And it's not good. Listen, debt's always there. It's always been there. It's not going away anytime soon, but the levels of personal debt and the levels of national debt are unbelievably high at the minute. And many, many people that are in debt at the moment, especially with credit cards, are going to struggle to get back out of that financial abyss. Because as you know, you're paying very, very high rates of interest. And many, many people are simply servicing their debt. They're not actually reducing it month on month. If they've got, you know, 10 grand on the credit card and you're paying 29% APR, your minimum payments every month that some people are struggling to make are just paying the interest and a little bit of capital. You know, it could take 40, 50 years to pay that off. And when you finally do pay it off, if you borrowed 10 grand, the equivalent repayment would be about 50 or 60, maybe even higher in some cases. So this is the norm now for America. The average US credit card debt is now estimated to be $6,500. In fact, the article says it's soaring past $6,500 per person. So if you can, I know it's not always possible, reduce any debt or borrowings that you have as much as possible. Number one, it's an absolute financial quagmire to be in. And number two, it means you're not tied to any institution or provider when it comes to them knocking on your door or harassing you for repayments, or if you default, wrecking you in your personal life. So that's coming in from America. Another story here actually from Ireland. According to data released to the Aontu leader political party following a parliamentary question to the Minister for Children, a child under 1 year old was placed in a special emergency arrangement by the provider Tusla last year. And there's a big scandal going on there in Ireland that a lot of people have been placed in care without the people being vetted properly. And here we have a one-year-old a child under a year old placed in special emergency arrangement by Tuzla last year. This is a scandal that the Irish government are doing their level best to suppress, and it's not something they want to see it reported on. But check it out. Tuzla, T-U-S-L-A. Look up Tuzla Ireland and look at the news headlines that are coming out in and around that organisation. Spine-chilling stuff, to put it mildly. So that's something maybe we should focus on a little bit more. I'll dig a little bit more into these scandals here on TNT as and when I can. But for now, I'm going to take a brief pause. Welcome Gemma back again and see what's happening on the breaking news front here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
Your voice heard here.
The government needs to step up and do its job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
No shortage of scandals, is there? It's hard actually to keep up. That's the tragedy with all this, Gemma. When one breaking headline comes out to say this is the truth about this product now, for example, AstraZeneca, you've got that in one hand, and then you've got on the other hand these child trafficking allegations and skullduggery and shenanigans happening somewhere else. It's very, very difficult to keep up with it, like spinning the plates.
It is. And I think we need to be careful. Again, I think you and I have talked about this a hell of a lot, actually. It's like where you focus your attention on something, you feed it. And also you can kind of become it. And if you take, I've had a few days away from the headlines by situational circumstance, really. I always try and keep abreast of everything over the weekend. But coming back to the news with a slightly fresher head, you're just so really made aware once again of the relentless negativity. It's always been that way. And the human brain is hardwired to look for the negative because it's always scanning for threats. That's the way the ego works. Is this a threat? Is this a threat? And because we're in our ego all the time, that's how we're programmed to live in society, we naturally gravitate to it. But it does have an effect both on the individual consciousness and the collective consciousness. And sometimes these negativities can become self-fulfilling. But we can't ignore it. It's a very fine balancing act between the state of the world, being aware of it, but then where you hold the power is, well, what do you decide to do? How do you decide to react or respond to what you're reading or hearing? And then how do you decide to live your life? I think the illustration you gave there about debt is a really good example. You know, what do you decide to do about that information then? Passively just keep receiving it, passively keep paying off the debts and servicing the banks and corporations, or are you going to take some action? You know, this is the balancing act between world events and our reaction to them. So it's a dangerous line we tread, I think, sometimes. You don't want to make people feel terrible about the world, but equally, it is what it is. And I don't like that statement normally, but it is what it is. But it's changing. It is changing. There is a shift. Jason Neosatos, that lovely interview you just did, there is this shift. Huge. Fork in the road. Where do we go from here? Everyone's got their part to play.
They do. And one other thing as well that I was thinking about over the weekend is, you know, we do have to almost immerse ourselves in this filth as we're reporting it, because that's what we do. We're trying to make people aware of what's happening in the world. We're trying to put a positive slant on it where we can, but it doesn't take away from the core of what these stories are, which is usually bad news. But one thing I do feel we try and do here, at least on this little segment that we have together, is we keep it varied. We don't zone in on one particular subject and thrash it to death. Okay, so in that respect, although we're still dealing with these issues, the focus isn't so intense in one area that becomes part of the makeup of who we are. So, you know, we're talking about bad news from Ireland as well as bad news from America and bad news from Australia and bad news from the Middle East and bad news from Ukraine. We like to spread the bad news around a little bit, Gemma. We don't like to focus on all of one area, do we?
No, I do sometimes feel that I end up talking about immigration rather more than I would like to, but that's indicative of world events and it is a big issue in the UK and Ireland. So what do? Ignore the big issues because you're finding yourself being depressed by talking about them, on all sides of the debate there, but it's an issue. And when you have stories that are ongoing and there's always follow-ups and situations change, that's what news is. And sometimes one issue dominates over another. I mean, certainly today I've seen so many headlines about China. I suddenly realized there's a narrative there that's being pushed and pushed and pushed. And I feel we probably will be talking about China a lot more, especially with Rishi alluding to it in his pre-election speech, which he's just given in London. So, yeah, sometimes it's one issue over another, but we respond and react to events as they happen, don't we? That's news. That's news.
That's news. Do we have any more on Sunak's speech? Has he finished it or is he still in the process of delivering that one?
No, he stood up at the Policy Exchange in London and he gave a half an hour speech, and he went around a lot of issues, a lot of which we touched on at the top of the last hour, which we thought he would talk about. He did talk about the threats from Russia, Ukraine and China. He said Russia, Ukraine especially had put the world on the brink of a nuclear escalation, the worst since the Cuban Missile Crisis in the 1960s. He talked about the Red Sea. He talked about China hacking in to the Ministry of Defense's payroll or staff data. I don't know why they keep doing that. It's embarrassing for the government, that. But he did. This China narrative is being ramped up. He had his eye on the future. He didn't really address many really prescient issues that I think the people of Britain want him to sort out: the NHS, the state of our roads, the state of our kind of domestic sort of setup, as it were. He talked a lot about AI, and it was very interesting because on the one hand, he said, you know, this is going to take all our jobs. So people are very insecure about AI. 40% of jobs, mostly at the bottom end of the sector, planning on going. Also AI, cyber technology. He says he's really very worried about children being sexualized and bullied online. That got my spider sense tingling. I think we'll see more restrictions, online restrictions coming in. And he did kind of say AI will outstrip the Industrial Revolution. We need to be concerned. I mean, that's all heading down the transhumanist agenda road. And then in the next breath, he said AI is presenting us with some wonderful opportunities. Now, to me, that's gaslighting. Make up your mind, Rishi. Which one is it? AI is terrible. AI is good. Very conflicting messages there. And not one I'm sure the UK electorate is actually that engaged with. But he also talked a lot about green policy. He talked a lot about immigration, said he understood what the UK public wanted. He was asked if Boris Johnson was going to come back and help him win the election, and he sidestepped that very nicely. He said, I welcome every Conservative that shares the same vision that I do, inferring that Boris Johnson didn't. And he didn't really focus on anything current. It was all ahead, you know, the future. And of course, that's almost what Barack Obama's campaign was, you know, about. Oh, we hope for change, the future. The future's obviously not set. And it's something you can set your sights on if you don't stand much chance of your policies in the present, I think. So it's quite a short speech. Interesting. AI, China, cyber, hacking. It's a creating a narrative there, I think, rather than actually reflecting what people want.
I think as well, Gemma, this whole business about, you know, the concept that AI is going to take over everybody's jobs, many people will be rendered obsolete. You and I could be easily replaced by AI, would think, and maybe shouldn't say that. But, you know, they've got enough of your voice sampled and enough of the way you deliver and the way I deliver. I'm sure if Mike, God bless him, and Jenny wanted to save a pound or two, they could get an AI chatbot and, you know, give us a few talking heads. But you can't add soul. You can't add soul to AI. It's soulless, and therefore I believe it becomes apparent when it's in use. But in terms of actual jobs, people saying, well, it'll never catch on. We need people to do this. We need people to do that. Just think about the last 20 years from the advent of the internet. If I told you, if I took you back to the 1985, 1986, and said, listen, soon you're not going to have a phone in your house. They'll be obsolete. But what? Everybody has a phone in their house. How can they replace that? No, it'll be replaced by a little handheld thing. Well, I don't think that's going to catch on. And cameras, remember cameras and films and leaving them into boots and getting your holiday? You're never going to use a camera again, not an old-fashioned one. It'll all be done in that little phone of yours. What, a phone and a camera? That's not possible. How can that be happening? Music. You know, we love our music. You went out and you bought LPs, you bought cassettes, you bought CDs. If I said back in the 80s, that's going to be rendered completely obsolete. HMV, Virgin Megastores, your local record shops, all gone, all gone. You won't be buying any physical music anymore because it'll also be held on this little telephone device. You'd have said, Rick, you're absolutely insane. And it's connected to a thing called the interweb without using wires. It's all done over the airwaves. You'd have thought I was a loop-loop, but here we are today, actually talking to each other over a internet connection. You where you are, I where I am, and our listeners where they are. Gemma, anything's possible. It's not possible until somebody does it, and I fear this thing could jump up and bite people in the ass quick smart.
Absolutely. And look at supermarket checkouts. If you just said 5 years ago, there'll be a thing of the past soon. They pretty much are in all supermarkets. Mm-hmm. You might be lucky if you get one human being on the till. Mm-hmm. Who saw that one coming? You know, with facial recognition technology to buy a pint of milk. You know, who saw that coming? Airports being like, you know, nothing more than glorified cattle markets and the way travel is now. You know, it is heading in a dystopian direction. Well, it's here, fueled by technology and artificial intelligence. And clearly, Rishi Sunak, he did, I mean, in a half an hour speech, a lot of it was devoted to AI and the pitfalls. He painted a very bleak picture and then said, but it's really good as well. Well, you know, make up your mind with it. You know, I suppose there will be people that say, no, there is good things. And I know people love their phones. A lot of people in the freedom movement love their phones. And a lot of people are very attached to the relationship they have with technology. Again, it's how we respond to it as individuals, not what we're told to do by the politicians, how we respond and we use this stuff in our lives. Well, until a point where it is thrust upon us and the transhuman agenda is actually here. The man-machine dynamic, the human-machine dynamic. That's the scary bit. Whether we'll see it in our lifetime, I don't know, Rick, but we're certainly on the way.
We're on the way, but it's not over until the fat lady sings. You know, there's still that John Connor moment that could happen and everything could get reversed and all that sort of business. But it's all good, lest we be tarred with the conspiracy theorist hat. But it's reality. We're just talking about things that are actually happening now, to the extent that the Prime Minister's actually just delivered a speech that's centered in on that very topic. So many thanks to you, Gemma, for the breaking news of the day. We shall talk again, hopefully tomorrow morning, bright and early, 11 a.m. Such an early start, but it's all good. And I hope you have a great day. Whatever you're going to do, I'll be back after this short break with my next guest, Mark Byford. So please stay tuned for him. We're going to talk farming in the UK on TNT, Today's News Talk.
Sometimes, a car comes along that changes everything. With innovations never thought possible, and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time, and this is that car. This is the world's first VWB. Equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With a touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you will never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires. And we removed the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
I have a feeling these are the suspects in question. Two occupants look like the people involved in the armed robbery. I'm approaching the vehicle. Request backup. The driver matches the description because of a wide-set nose.
When I had my heart event close to 4 years ago, I was at the gym, thought I deserve a coffee, and thought I'll top up with fuel. Ordered a coffee, but while I was pumping fuel, I started to get chest pains. Then it got worse and worse and worse. So then I was leaning on the counter thinking, yeah, something's not quite right. So then I went to wait for the coffee, and that's when it really, really hit. And Joy just, you know, mouthed, do you need an ambulance? And I remember nodding. I wasn't even thinking about a heart attack. I just thought, something is seriously wrong with me here. So when the cardiologist came to see me, she informed me that I'd had what they call a widowmaker heart attack. Bit of a shock when someone says, you know, you nearly died. everybody should be aware of all the symptoms of a heart attack that women can have that aren't typical of the shoulder pain, the right arm pain. I go to the gym, I do yoga, Pilates, I swim, I go on bike rides, and yet I still had a heart attack. You just don't know, it could be you.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
You are about to hear
today's news talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country is all about.
Today's news talk, TNT.
Yes, TNT, locked and loaded. I'm very happy to be joined for the first time here on this show by one and only Mark Byford. He is a farmer. No, he's not a farmer. He's a farmer. He's a farmer based in Suffolk. He's not a former farmer. Maybe that's just predictive programming there. Based in Suffolk in the UK. He's very active in the No Farmers, No Food campaign. And we're going to be talking today about what the current state of play is with British farming and what the outlook is. And we're going to be realistic about it. We're not going to be tinting it with rose-tinted glasses or painting it to be something worse than it's not. Mark, how are you doing this morning?
Fantastic. Thank you for having me on the show. It's amazing to be here.
Listen, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I've been keeping an eye on this one. This is a story that I've been covering for, you know, regularly for quite a long time now. And there were a lot of predictions going around about the direction farming's taking. And I know at the minute, crops are really, really bad at the minute. Government support's not really there for the farmers, despite what they say that they're doing there. Someone who's working the land himself, someone who's actually on the ground at the minute, is it as bleak as it's pictured, or is it better than it's pictured, or is it fairly accurate, some of the reports that are coming out about harvests and longevity?
Okay, I would say it's not realistic to what they're saying. It's a lot worse than what they're letting on. In my opinion, and, you know, I don't know if you can see today out the window, but it's lovely blue skies here today. It's the first kind of few days of sunshine this year, really, we've had. We set the winter barley. That was washed out. We repeated that with wheat. That was washed out. We set spring barley. That's kind of took hold. But the cost of the production on that now, as a third lot of seed going in the ground, is astronomical. It's going to force the price up considerably. Crop averages are going to be down this year because we've got a lot of patches on the ground where there's no grain grown at all. So where we are in Suffolk, we're in the east of the country, and we're predominantly cereal crop or sugar beet. And we are probably going to be down this year about 37 to 38% on crop production. The potato growers in the area as yet still haven't got all their crops in the ground. So on a normal year where you might see one crop is going to be down, we're going to see everything across the board. So this is all the cereal, all the veg, you know, all the fruit is down. So we're in for a real harsh winter. I hate to say that, but I think if people haven't realized yet, they need to wake up and smell the roses.
Let me ask you a question, because this is going to affect me. I'm not a farmer, but this is going to affect me, because if there's a lack of produce there, obviously supply and demand is going to mean I'm going to be paying more for it when I go to try and buy it myself. So from the consumer's point of view, it's going to mean financial pain. Let me ask you a question. As a farmer, you talk about a loss or absorbing a loss of maybe 37, 38%, maybe higher, maybe lower than that. Who takes the full hit for that? Does it fully land in the farmer's lap, or are there subsidies that are available, or is there any kind of compensatory fund that's available for that, or are you responsible for carrying the can yourself?
Yeah, I mean, so, sorry, I think you misunderstood me. So the 37% is how much crop production's down?
Yep. That'll hit into your profits. And you said that you were seeding for the third time in some cases year. So again, that's out of your pockets. Now, of course, you know, if I open a business and I just don't get the footfall through, somebody could say, well, Rick, that's on you. There's nothing to prevent. That's your mistake. You're going to have to pay for it. I think what I was driving at, Mark, was, is there any support that's available given that If you don't produce food, then we don't eat. That's the bottom line. So was there any kind of subsidy built into that, or are you on your own?
No, we're on our own completely. What I will say, they've given lots of subsidies this year in the UK to grow pretty flowers and grass, because, you know, you get really fat on that stuff. I don't know if you've ever tried living on pretty flowers and grass, but they're not very nutritious. And I don't really fancy, you know, joining that the vegan group. But I don't even think the vegans want to eat pretty flowers and grass. I think what we're going to see is the prices are going to go through the roof this year. I can see the price of fresh produce doubling in the next year without any doubt at all. I can't see we can get away from that. The farmers can't sustain producing food at the rate they are and losing money. It's as simple as that. So, you know, you have to be realistic to these things, and you have to look at all of this and think to yourself, well, where do we go from here? Mm-hmm. Most of the older farmers have made the decision this year. They've been offered a bailout, so effectively to buy the farm off of them. Mm-hmm. So they're given £105,000 to come out of farming, £105,000 to come out, and then a corporation buys up the land to stop anyone else buying it to farm. Mm-hmm. So this is the likes of BlackRock or, you know, one of the other Venarius, you know, companies. So, and that's all backed by the banking industry, as we know. And, you know, we've dealt with the chemtrail situation this winter. Has been horrendous. I don't know what it's like the rest of the world. UK has been horrendous weather. I've never seen like anything like it. And so some of the older people I'm talking to, you know, I'm 56. You're talking to my dad, who's 84 now, and he says, we've never had rain like this fall. We know it's been played with. We know they're trying to put us out of business. And, you know, I think what will come, we've had all the rain. The next thing will be 6 months with no water, and then we won't be able to grow anything as a result of no water. So I think that's what's next.
Yeah, it's a grim picture that you're painting, but yet people don't have to look too far just outside the window to see that that's what's actually happening. And it's happening everywhere. It's not just localized into one part of the UK either. It's Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, Republic of Ireland. Absolutely. It's everywhere. We've got to take a little headline break, but when I come back, I want to look at this business of, you know, why should we give you any sympathy? Because I know there'd be people saying, well, that's your problem. You're a farmer, deal with it. But I don't think people are seeing the big picture in this one. That's the problem. When we can spend billions and billions in overseas aid to fund wars, etc., and we can't sustain our own farmers, because if you don't grow, we don't eat. Or if we do eat, we're going to eat at twice the price. People need to put the thinking caps on and realize what the big picture here is. Absolutely. You may not be a farmer, but you are affected by what goes on with the farming community. So let's look at that. What's going out elsewhere versus what's going in towards you guys and keeping you guys in business. So we'll do that when we come back on TNT here, TNT Today's News Talk.
Big news? We do have some big news.
TNT Radio News.
Big news.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. Egypt has vowed to support South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice. There were remarkable scenes in the US over the weekend, where 100,000 people showed up to watch Donald Trump speak at a rally in New Jersey. And Elon Musk is celebrating a major win against the Australian government over its demands to censor video of last month's alleged terrorist stabbing in Sydney.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Just throwing the question out there, and I get that a lot of people will be shrugging their shoulders and saying, well, why should the farmers get help? I have a business. Nobody's helping me. I'm going under. I'm not saying that that's a good thing. I'm not saying that it's a just thing. But what I'm trying to say is, if you see the bigger picture here, if my local coffee shop goes out of business, and I hope it doesn't, because I try and support local businesses wherever I can, it's not really going to impact me directly the same way as it would, for example, if a local farmer had 50 acres worth of potatoes and they all failed this year. That's going to impact on me and everybody else in my area. So there's an investment that I believe we all need to have made into our futures here to make sure that this doesn't fail, because if it does, it's very, very bad.
Yeah, I mean, what's happened over the course of the years, and this has been very sly, I have to say. So originally in the UK, there was this help available to farmers in the aid of subsidies. So the cost of the production was really low. The cost of to the consumer was high. And so to vary that out, we would be paid to produce at a cheap price, and the price would come down to the consumer. Now, what's happened is, the supermarkets have had all of that profit. So this is where the problem comes. So they've forced the price down to the farmer. They've pushed the price up to the consumer. So all of the subsidy money, what was supposed to be helping the farmer, is now sitting within the profit of the supermarkets. That's why they're earning so much. So what's going to happen? And you know, I don't want any sympathy, and I don't think any British farmer wants to get sympathy. What they do want is a fair price for what they produce.
Yeah.
And people are going to find this year that the fair price is a lot, lot more than they've paid in the past, because now there's no subsidies. There's no assistance now for the farmers at all. If your crop's washed out, if you were insured, they're not going to pay out on it anyway, because they say it's an act of God. Mm-hmm. So what we're now up against is we're going to be producing food at twice the cost what people are used to paying for it. It's going to push the price up in the supermarkets astronomically. My suggestion is ditch the supermarket, support the farmers, and then you'll get a better price for the product.
Yeah, and if you can, you know, buy directly. A lot of people, especially outside of the towns and cities, there are farm markets around. A lot of farmers, there's one far away from me. I buy my milk from them, and I can buy fresh fruit and vegetables from them as well. If you can, you should do that. One last thing, just as we're round this one off, this carrot, no pun intended, that's being dangled in front of the farmers' notices to get out of the business. This 105 grand get out payment plus a corporate buyout of the land. I can't fault any farmer that's in dire straits financially for considering doing that. Okay, because people say, oh, they sold out. If it was you, if it was me, and I was on a farm that was losing money hand over fist, I would be tempted to get out of it too. But the problem is, Mark, I don't know what it's like for you and your farm, but most farms are family things. You know, you maybe took it on from your dad, who took it on from his dad, and you hope to pass it on to your next of kin. That's broken all of a sudden. So not only do you have the business stopped and transferred into a corporation, but then you have a family line of that could go back generation after generation wiped out as well.
Yeah, I mean, from my side, you know, I'm fourth generation. So for me, I find it difficult, you know, to even think, you know, where do we go from here? Because as well as losing the farms and the farmers, you're losing the knowledge, and that knowledge in the forthcoming 5 years is going to be absolutely paramount for us to survive on this planet. And I don't make light of that situation, because we are being forced further and further down this road of eating bugs and, you know, manipulated steak, you know, produced in labs and things. That's where they're trying to get us. I don't want to take part. Most farmers don't. But unfortunately, we're financially backed into a corner now. Over 2,500 farmers out of 105,000 farmers in the UK have already taken that payment to get out. And that gives you an idea of how grim the situation is.
Yeah. And again, you can't fault people that are in dire straits for doing that. But then again, isn't that sick that the government knows that they've put people into a corner and then they're offering them this get out incentive, and it would be very, very difficult to turn that down. Listen, we're pretty much up to time. I want to direct people towards the No Farmers, No Food account on the Extra Twitter platform. You can find it at No Farms, No Food, at No Farms, No Food. And just a reminder of what you said there, Tuesday, the 14th of May, which is tomorrow, is World Farmers Day. As a show of solidarity to farmers, boycott the major supermarkets that day. Yes, do send them a message, get the message out there. And if you can, get round to your local farm store, look them up. There's got to be one close by to you, and give them your business directly. Mark, brilliant to talk to you. Keep fighting
the good fight. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure, and we'll stay in touch, maybe talk again in this one as it continues to develop. That's Mark Byford. Or have I got it right? Is it Byford or Bifford? Which one is it?
No, Byford, yeah. You're right.
All right, Byford it is then. I'm not going to fall out with you over that one, but I get it right.
Bowler hat
farmer. You keep on the straight and narrow, my friend, and keep fighting the good fight, and we'll talk again sooner rather than later. I'll be back after this short ad break with John Waters over here in Ireland, so don't go away. We'll be right back on TNT, Today's News Talk.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
On a virtual road, you can test the limits of your driving ability to see how fast you can go under the most extreme conditions, like when it's dark, when the weather's bad, or when the unexpected happens. The higher the speed, the harder the impact. But driving isn't a game or a race. When you're on the road, just 10 miles per hour over the limit can mean the difference between life and death. You're responsible for people's lives and your own. Slow down and save lives.
Rick Mon is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, locked and loaded. Rick Mon coming at you live here from TNT, Today's News Talk. Really happy to be joined again after what seems to be an eternity, but it's not. It's only been a month or two by the one and only John Waters. He's a thinker. He's a writer. He's a talker. He's a legend. He's a scholar and he's a judge. And now he's thrown his hat into the political arena as well, running as a candidate in the upcoming Irish elections for Europe as an independent. Mr. Waters, how are you this fine day?
Not bad, Rick. Not bad.
Are you convincing me, John? You're a bit flat, if you don't mind me saying so. Come on, put a bit more oomph in there.
I'm on the campaign trail, Rick. You know, I mean, I'm. It's a. At least I should. I have to pretend to be tired, you know, because otherwise my my team will start to worry that I'm swinging the lead, you know. So I have to look a bit jaded. I'm waking up.
Well, tell me this. Let's talk about this campaign trail. I had your friend on last week for the first time, the wonderful Jerry Waters, Dr. Jerry Waters, and you two guys are both running as independents. He's running as an independent candidate for Midland and the Northwest. These European elections are taking place, I believe, in Ireland on the 7th of June. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. Friday, I think.
So how's it been on the campaign trail, John? Because I know your face and your name will be familiar to many people at the minute. You've went out as an independent. You're not aligning with any one particular party at the minute. What's the thinking process behind that one? Do you reckon that's just the best fit for you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to be a politician, Rick. Surprise, surprise. I don't want to be in politics. I mean, the reason I'm running is nothing to do with any career ambitions or anything like that. It's because of the terrible state our country is in and the fact that our political system has completely turned rogue against the people and is basically brutalizing the people and ignoring them and, you know, gaslighting them at every turn. I mean, it's something we've talked about for the last while, Rick, you know, and it just gets worse and worse, and it defies description, even for anybody like me who's lived all his life in what I presume to be some kind of democracy, whereby, you know, for example, the country is being flooded with indifferent aliens from Africa and the Middle East, and nobody wants them, and yet they're being forced on tiny communities, and they're just being told to suck it up, you know, and it boggles the mind, really. So I decided that, you know, I've been talking about all this stuff for years and encouraging people, you know, look, we've got to go in there and take back our systems. We've got to take back our institutions. We've got to take back our country. But then I thought, well, you know, people that were on to me, well, why don't you run? And I didn't want to run personally. I'm hitting and the kicking the ass of 70, as we say, you know. And but can I really urge people to do something that I'm not prepared to do? I mean, that's a good question. And so I said, well, at this time anyway, I'm going to put myself out there and at least show an example. And maybe people can look at me and say, win or lose, well, I could do better than that. I could do that. And out of that, we would get that lost middle ground of our country. You know, this country is now dominated by the voices of total extremists, and we could get this country, the people who kind of used to emerge into politics one time before it became a supranational activity, you know, that the power was all sucked upwards. You know, we got intelligent, you know, thoughtful, you know, people of good character into politics. That doesn't happen anymore. We get the lowest forms of life into our political system. Mm-hmm. And it's time that we if we don't correct that, in my view, it's going to be kaput, you know?
I think, John, you know, there's been a lot of, well, Ireland's had certainly it's a lot of issues through its government over the last few years. If you even go back 4 years ago, when you look at what happened with the scandemic that was thrust upon people, the lockdowns, the injections, the social isolation that people felt, people still went along with it. They grumbled about it in some cases, but the majority of the people were happy to play ball with that. Personally, when I look at this, and I'm covering this all the time here, I think this whole open borders policy, the flooding of Ireland with people from overseas, I believe if anything is going to break the back of the Irish government, metaphorically speaking, it's going to be this issue, because I don't know that anybody with a right-thinking brain in their head can support this, given the state that Ireland's in at the minute. And I really do believe that there's going to be one issue that's going to bring this all to a head in Ireland. It's going to be this issue in particular.
That's 100% correct, I think, Rick. I mean, that and the general, I suppose, existential threat that faces our country in you know, connected to that, but over and beyond that, which is the interference of extranational, undemocratic forces in our country, imposing all kinds of, you know, agendas, the climate change agenda, basically, you know, attacking the farming sector and so on. But what I'm finding, Rick, is really quite dismaying in some respects, because like last week, I did a conference, an event organized by the Irish Farmers Association, who kind of speak for most of the farmers. And it was quite a lot of people there, and we lots of candidates went. Something like 15 out of the 28 of us were there. You know, we're lined up at the front of the hall, like kids waiting to be examined for catechism or something. You know, but the thing that came across to me really was that the agenda of the IFA is like 30 years out of date insofar as like what's happening in our country now. You know, what's happening is an existential crisis. It's what is happening is that the very people of the West are being attacked via the farming sector, which is the source of their food. And I mean, the only outcome of that can be, if it goes badly, right or wrong, depending on who you are in this whole equation, right or wrong, is starvation, hunger, famine. These are inevitable consequences of messing around with food supply and production and supply lines. And this is happening. But the farming sector at an institutional level, at an organization level, doesn't seem to be conscious that this is an issue at all. And that I came away thinking, well, the IFA is part of the establishment of Ireland. And you mentioned the scandemic. Well, all the establishment institutions got together to blackmail and bully and bamboozle the people into buying into this. And as a result of that, because of the sheer numbers and the sheer consensus that was bombarding them, they actually bought into it in a way that actually seriously endangered their well-being and their lives. And this continues. And this really dismays me that, you know, I'm in a room like that, and it's like, you know, I'm speaking in English, and there, you know, I'm in Uzbekistan or somewhere, and nobody understands what I'm saying. It's a different language. It's a different planet, and to me, it's the only planet that I can see around me. It's one that's in mortal danger now from certain forces.
It is. I don't know if you caught it or not, but the guest that I had on just before you was actually a farmer in Suffolk in England, okay? And we were talking about the woes that the farmers are going through over in England at the minute. He's a fourth-generation farmer. He's talking about the crops have failed terribly this year. They're seeding out the third set of crops. They're hoping to salvage something. They're being ripped off by the supermarkets. And one of the things that's happening off the back of this, I'm not sure if the exact state of play in Ireland is, but farmers in England are being offered a get-out handshake of 105,000 quid plus a buyout of their farmland to say, look, you guys are struggling, crops are failing, the future's looking bleak. If you want it, we will pay to get you out of the farming business and we will take over that land. The land will then be bought over by corporations and those corporations will not be farming the land. I don't blame farmers that are struggling for taking that, because if your back's against the wall financially and you have a family to feed and someone comes along and offers you that, you know, it's not good, but you can understand why people would be incentivized for that. Are we not? Are we going to get to that position in Ireland where the farmers will just say, well, you know what, stuff it. I've been offered a lot of money to get out, much the same way as Cirque were offering hotels and guest houses and accommodations, big money to put migrants in there and kill the tourist industry.
That's why we need to really to get break into the system and get the truth out there. And the truth is, I know this from my own tiny way, like trying to grow my vegetables in my garden. Like the rain in Ireland, it's rained pretty much for a full year now, you know, something like 10 months. Like there was no, and my crops were destroyed last year. My modest crops of potatoes and vegetables, you know, and that, I'm just a tiny little, you know, back garden gardener. And I'm aware of what the cause of this is, Rick, you see. This is not natural. This is not climate change. Mm-hmm. This is geoengineering. They're doing this deliberately to destroy the productivity of farms and of food production. Now, people need to understand this. The farming sector need to understand this. They need to stop listening to the pseudo-reality lies of put out by the mainstream media where they're being told that this is to do with the climate change and so on and so on, and that anything else is conspiracy theory. This is the truth. And unless we wake up to this truth, we're going to be in the biggest trouble we've ever been in. Far trouble, more trouble than we ever thought was possible within a civilization before.
And you know what, John, just listening to you talking there super passionately, by the way, and rightly so, the point that I made to the farmer that was on before you came on was, when the farmers are affected, we're affected, because if they don't farm and they don't have crops, we don't eat. And you know how that has been weaponized in the past, Ireland food production and food shortages, etc. Yeah. Are we coming up to that point again, or is that too far-fetched, am I thinking? Am I looking too much into this?
100%, Greg, it is definitely, because look, when I know these kind of people, I look at them, the guys who are talking, all these people who are talking about climate change, these are what I call shiny suits and shiny sued people, you know, and they have no idea what they're doing. No idea that there is a connectivity between what they're doing and the food on their tables. When these people go into a supermarket and look around them, what they see is bottles and jars and tins and cartons. They don't see what's in those containers, which is food, which was grown on farms. And if you start to interfere with that ecology, you're going to create massive catastrophes on a global scale. There is no question in my mind this is already happening. I said to these farmers the other night, in the few little bites I got across, because it was all ridiculously orchestrated and managed by two guys from the Irish Farmers Journal, who was obviously in on this whole agenda. But I said, you know, do you not know that Bill Gates is the biggest landowner in the United States of America, and that all within the last 4 years? Do you think he might know something that you don't? You know, and they don't look, they look at you like their own cows would look at you, you know? It really is appalling and catastrophic.
You know, ignorance, you know, the Bible says people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. And I think that's what we're seeing at the minute. And I'm listening to you talking, and I'm saying this, my observation is you're immensely passionate about what you're talking about, but this is the most concerned that I've heard you in all the conversations that we have had together, because I believe, John, myself also, I believe we're coming up to a crescendo point in Ireland at the minute. Things just can't keep going the way they're going. And I think the concern comes from that if this is not stopped and this rot is not stopped now, it is going to be beyond catastrophic for the people of Ireland that slumber into this. And I think that's where your concern comes from. It's not a fear, but it's a deep, deep concern mixed in with a passion that something needs to be done and it needs to be done now.
It's a knot in my stomach, Rick, that I can't dissipate. It's fear. It's fear. Or what I see, the consequences that are coming for our country. You know, I see this like around me, this weather, we've had this appalling weather. Like every farmer I meet tells me he can't grow anything. People are just like at their wit's end. And the idea of getting money for your land, I mean, that's a joke, Rick, because that's fake money. That's funny money. Within months or weeks, the entire currencies of the West are going to collapse. And the money that you think you've got in the bank as a result of selling your farm, well, if you're still in your farmhouse, you can go into your bathroom, take a roll of toilet paper off the hook, bring it out. That will be worth more than all the money you have in your bank that you've got for your farm. This is where we're going in the West. This is what all this has been about. This has been the greatest, the most heinous crime in history, which is essentially we're coming to the supernova of the money systems of the West, where they're about to burn out. And this is where these guys are moving in now to capitalize, to concretize, to substantialize the fake paper money they've been using for decades in order to enrich themselves. Now they want to enrich themselves absolutely at the absolute cost to the human people of the West.
Hell's bells, man. What a grim scenario this is. And let me ask you the question here. We're coming up to elections. Obviously, anybody with an eye on their head can see the damage that Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin are doing. But when you look at the protests that were happening in Dublin last week or the week before, people screaming about Sinn Féin being traitors, the rise in the amount of independent candidates that are coming forward in this next election. What if, worst case scenario is, these jokers, Harris and co, get back in again? A menace to Ireland, the like of which I've hardly seen before, in the shape and form of Helen McEntee, isn't able to hang on to her position with those icy steel fingers of hers, like a limpet or on a barnacle on a ship. You know, it'll take a hammer and chisel to get rid of McEntee. What if these jokers are back in again? I mean, I can't see that people are just going to sit back and absorb that over the next few years. I believe it's going to go to a very dark place.
Very dark, very dark. Well, see, that's why, I mean, I'm running for the European elections as a kind of, obviously, that is an important thing. To win would be important. The symbolism of winning in that would be important in order to wake up those kind of what I call the great but anonymous people of Ireland who are in slumber out there, who don't realize the gravity of this moment, and to tell them, come quickly. This is an emergency such you've never imagined. And of course, if we don't, in the coming general election, which will happen within a year, possibly within six months, then, you know, we are into another 5 year of these tyrants, these idiots, these complete simpletons, like who don't know anything, who have no wisdom, who are cavalier about, you know, the very exercising of power, who've handed it away willy-nilly, who invite half the world into a country, a tiny island. You know, and then they tell us that we're doing it out of their humanity, you know, their compassion. Well, I say, there's another 1.5 billion people in Africa. When are you going to bring them in, eh? Where are you going to put them?
And that's the thing, John, just to close this off, here's an example. I don't know if you know this or not, but the new mayor of Derry is a Maasai woman, okay, who claims she's a refugee. She's been in Ireland for a long time, apparently. Now she's the mayor of Derry under the SDLP, and she says she's a proud Maasai woman, and she's also, in her words, a Derry girl right now. Now, I know Kenya very well, and Kenya, if you're oppressed in Kenya, it's very easy to flee into one of the neighbouring countries. One of the biggest harbours of refugees in Africa is Uganda. So if she was under threat in Kenya, for example, she could have hopped across the border into Uganda, or she maybe would have went north, or she could have went south, she could have went anywhere, but she ended up in Ireland. Now, her brother, I believe, is a senator in the Kenyan government, so I don't know what you know, guys, she came to Ireland under and know nothing about her, except that she's now labelling people of Derry as domestic terrorists if they stand up against open borders policy. And I believe this woman is inflaming a lot of division and causing a lot of rancour at the minute. Is that something that's done by design, or is she just simply completely ignorant of the background to the history of Derry, for example, and human rights abuses and terrorism?
Well, I wouldn't underestimate her stupidity in any sense, Rick, you know, but undoubtedly this is part of an agenda which has been orchestrated again by those shiny suits who don't know what they're doing, it seems to me. I'm talking about the useful idiots who are implementing all these agendas. The guys who are issuing the orders know full well the consequences of this, and the consequences of this will be horrific. There's no question about it now. Ireland's now out of control. We have a false economy, we label it masquerading as a real economy, which is basically a tax-dodging, money-laundering system for corporations. And that is going to collapse when all this happens. And they're going to leave, leaving Ireland. I talking about Kenya, you know, I've been to Kenya several times, and one of the poorest places I've ever seen in the world anywhere was in the Kibera slums
in Nairobi. I know it.
And if you want to see poverty, go there. And a woman who comes here to Ireland pontificating from Kenya about anything, has a bloody some nerve to be lecturing the Irish people about how to run their country when she comes from a country in which such a scar, such a wound exists on the face of humanity.
Indeed, and Kibera Slum, if you're not familiar with it, K-I-B-E-R-A. Look that place up. If you think things are bad, check out Kibera Slum in Nairobi. It's an absolute hellhole and then some. John, we're up to time. The time has flown by. Time has run away with us as it normally does. I just want to direct people towards your Substack page. John Scott is a fantastic writer. Check out his Substack page, johnwaters.substack.com. You'll be able to find out updates on his upcoming election bid. And if you can, get out to the polls. Vote Waters 1 and 2. Jerry and John Waters 1 and 2. It doesn't matter if you mix them up. I don't think they're going to fall out over it on the upcoming elections on the 7th of June here in Ireland. John, have an absolutely epic day. It's always an absolute pleasure talking to you, and we'll stay in touch and hopefully do this again sooner rather than later. That's John Waters. I'm Rick Bunn. This is TNT. I got to get out of here. James Freeman incoming. I'll be back again in the morning with more here. Don't go away. Stay tuned.